Welcome to Ritual of Practice Podcast. I am your host, Angela Houghton. The intention of this podcast is to inspire your practice. I thought it would be fun to offer stories of how different people integrate practice in their lives. I am so appreciative of the humans that share their experience on this podcast, and to you, listener, for joining us. May you show up for what lights you up. Hello. Today on the podcast, I interview my new friend, Kimberly Ariela Dueñas. We're talking about chocolate today on the show, and it was such a fun conversation. I really didn't want it to end. So cacao is the topic. Cacao is what chocolate is made of, if you didn't already know that. And I had the opportunity to participate in a ritual, a cacao ritual led by Kimmy, when I was in El Salvador this past winter. So this was such a fun conversation that led to all sorts of things. And one of the coolest places it went is integration and evolution. Of course, we're evolutionary beings. And it was really fun to kind of sift through some of this with Kimmy as she shared her story of going back to her roots, literally, to El Salvador. Her family had migrated, her father, when he was a very young man, to the United States. And so she grew up in California. And I'm not going to say any more because her story is so fun. And I am delighted that you are listening. Thank you so much. And here we go with Kimmy.
We're here. Yay. Thank you so much, Kimberly, for being willing to, you know, sit down and talk with me today about your practice of cacao.
My pleasure.
I want to formally introduce you, and I'm going to let you say your full name because I think that it's really beautiful, and I'd love to hear the listeners hear it come from your voice. So,
sure.
Say your full name.
Yes. Well, I'm so happy to be here. My name is Kimberly Ariela Dueñas, and it's taken me, I'll say this because I'm learning to really share my name with full pride. Because it's taken me a few years of really coming home to myself and loving and appreciating and reclaiming my identity to say that proud. So I am Kimberly Ariela Dueñas, but my friends call me Kimmy. So we're friends now. You can call me Kimmy today.
Okay, sweet, Kimmy. Well, I must have been meant to then ask you that as part of the journey. So just honor that. Well, I was inspired to bring you on to the podcast. I'll just share briefly where we met. I met Kimmy in El Salvador, and I was there on retreat with some girlfriends for yoga and surfing. And while I was there, I saw advertised an offering that Kimmy was doing on a sacred cacao ceremony. And so I thought, wow, I don't think there are many people that don't like chocolate. I'm sure they are out there. But I imagine that there are more people that enjoy chocolate than don't enjoy chocolate. And so, just bringing it really to the roots, I thought it'd be fun to hear, just get intimate with your journey with cacao. And so my first question is, what initially sparked your interest in cacao?
I love this. Let's get intimate. Let's go there. Well, and that's just so reflective of cacao. It's opening, it's vulnerable, it's presence making, it's all the things. So I'm happy to be able to bring that in today. So my journey with cacao, I think I've always been a chocoholic. I've always had a love and a reverence for chocolate. And I just thought it was okay because I love chocolate, or I grew up in a bakery. My parents owned a bakery for over 30 years. Like, chocolate was always my thing. But once I moved back to El Salvador and started to spend time on our family farms, learn about our traditions, get into the ancestral wisdom that had pretty much felt disconnected from me since my father migrated during the Civil War, it became very clear to me that no, it's not just a sweet addiction that I have. It's actually a deeply rooted DNA bound connection that I have to cacao. And to the spiritual benefits, to the physical benefits, there's so much there. And so it really, my homecoming journey has truly been aided by the practice of cacao, by coming back to the land, learning about how to grow cacao, learning about the great mysteries of cacao, and being able to share that practice with others. And this journey home has been so beautiful, but it's also been kind of hard. I think for anyone who can relate, who's had an experience of immigration, if their parents immigrated or they themselves were brought up in a culture that wasn't theirs, I think there's a lot of loss and grief there. And so being able to reconnect with my ancestors through cacao, through this practice, has given my heart the medicine that I've needed to kind of hold the complexity of this life change that I've been going through. So I have a really deep connection to cacao. And there's so many things that I can say about it. And I guess I can start with why I feel so called to be a practitioner, to be someone who educates about cacao. I also want to start with naming that, you know, cacao is a colonized plant. It has been on our lands for thousands of years throughout Mesoamerica. And because it's everywhere, it's in Hershey's, it's our smoothie powders, you know, it's everywhere. Most people don't actually know about the origins of chocolate. They don't know where it comes from. They don't know how it grows or what it's taken to be put into a cute packaged little bag that you buy at the store. And so I want to start there because I really want to honor the loss of culture that has made chocolate what it is today. And anytime that I get to speak about cacao, I feel like it's a little spark of healing for all of those people that were lost in the process as cacao was colonized by the conquistadors all those years ago. They discovered the magic of cacao from the indigenous peoples. They figured out that it was a superfood. They figured out that it was deeply sacred for us. And they were on such a mission to eliminate our culture that they took it and they changed it. And it became just a resource, not a sacred life way, really, of our people. So I'm starting there. And I also want to name that there are still indigenous communities in El Salvador, in Guatemala, in different countries and throughout Latin America where cacao grows, that people are working really, really hard to make sure that this knowledge is still held and protected. We're in safer times now, thank goodness. So more and more people of the land are becoming braver, are feeling more supported, are feeling more resourced to be leaders and teachers of cacao. There's a lot of people from around the world who come to our parts of the world. And it's amazing. I see cacao ceremonies and gatherings happening globally. It's incredible. And a lot of the people who are doing it in good consciousness are working with local farms. They're helping people really spread the true essence of cacao. So for anyone who's out there, making sure that if you are exploring cacao, and I truly believe that it's medicine for the globe, it's universal, it's for all people, but we always want to be in right relationship with these sacred plants, with anything that's of a culture that might not be ours. So if you are exploring your own cacao journey, make sure that it's coming from a farm or an organization or a community, that it goes back, that whatever funding goes back into the community, that goes back into helping the people, because this is a lot of our livelihoods. And I say ours as Latinos, as people with indigenous ancestry. So I'm going to start there. And just thank you for the platform to be able to talk about this, because I think there's definitely an interest. The world is like, oh, all eyes on cacao. And it's so funny because it's so old. But but very often, because of, you know, whoever's writing history, these parts get left out. So I'm very, very grateful for the chance to be able to kind of do right by our people and share the real story.
Mm. Yeah, you're a gift in this, in that your voice is, I think, one that, yeah, is being called to share the stories, not just by me. I feel it deeply. I do have a question kind of specifically, well, a couple of different, there's layers to this question. So I heard you say, like, when you moved back to El Salvador, and this was a big part of your journey and getting intimate with your family's land, but was there kind of maybe a moment prior to that where you yourself went to a cacao ceremony or something that really kind of, you're like, got that sort of, there's something here.
Yeah.
Where you started to step in that direction. Can you speak to that?
Sure. That's such a great question. And I think there's a few things that kind of came to a head for me. I've been a yoga teacher for several years now, and I had the incredible opportunity to live in India for a significant amount of time. I was there for over 2 years, and I studied yoga. I was just fully immersed in Indian life. I had an Indian boyfriend. I was all in. It was really, really beautiful. And I want to start there because as I've been kind of repatriating to my homeland as a Salvadorian, I've been reflecting a lot about that time in India, like how much I loved it, how I was like fully immersed and embracing the culture. And a part of me has realized that I think I was just really looking for where is my place in the world and where is my home. And I've grown up in beautiful, at a beautiful part of California. And I have so many blessings for the life that I had, but I didn't grow up in a Latino community. I didn't grow up in a Salvadorian community. And I now know that I was craving that. And so I was like deeply like called to like embracing all of my, in, like my, the life that I could in India. And now that I'm so full, I'm so in my Salvadorian self now, I realize, oh, like I was searching for something. So yoga has kind of played a really important role in one, understanding ritual, and two, how culture and ritual are really important for humanity and for me. And so it was kind of my pathway into what's mine. And as I moved back to LA and I was living my life, being in the yoga world in LA, we're exposed to so many different spiritual modalities or earth medicine practices and different things. So I actually attended my first cacao circle or ceremony. This was a number of years ago. It was pre-pandemic. And I just remember feeling like I had a lot of feelings. I was like, oh my gosh, this is something I think that particular cacao must've been from Guatemala, but I remember thinking, oh my gosh, this is close to home. Mm-hmm. And this is so special. I've never seen my people kind of celebrated in this way. I had been so cut off from like the spiritual knowledge of my ancestry. So it was like really mind blowing for me. But then there was also a part of me that was a little sad because I didn't have this knowledge. I didn't grow up with this. I didn't, the person who was holding the circle, she was an incredible dear friend of mine and someone who really honors the cacao medicine, but it wasn't someone that shared the same culture as me. So I was like, wait, it was kind of like a dissociating moment. I was like, where am I? What's going on? And like, everything was just kind of, a lot of things were happening at the same time, but it opened something inside of me to get curious. Mm-hmm. And then fast forward, the pandemic happens and I had started to kind of play with cacao a little bit, like, okay, there's something here for me. And I couldn't get away from it. Like I kept being invited to different cacao things, or I had a friend of mine who started a cacao company with this indigenous community in Guatemala, and I was spending more time with her, and I was like, wait, what is going on? And then one day I get a call from my dad, and he says that he wants to go back home to El Salvador and work on our farms. And something inside of me was just like ready, arrived, like, okay, we're doing this. And I think being open to that call of listening to my ancestors, of wanting to deepen a connection to my culture, wanting to find a way of life that is close to my bones, that's what kind of opened that for me. So I'm really grateful to all of the different spiritual paths that I've had through yoga and Eastern philosophy, through even my relationship to the divine that I was raised with. Like all these different things kind of led me to this point of there's culture and there's ritual inside of you. And here's an opportunity for you to dive into that. And now here I am, like almost three years later, being back in El Salvador, and we're growing cacao. We have about 400 trees on our farm right now that are growing, which is so exciting. I've had incredible teachers that have been guiding me and sharing their stories with me. And I still have so much to learn, but whatever I do learn, I share. And that's why I want to hold cacao gatherings and workshops and let people know that this is a critical part of our culture. It's been such an integral part of our spiritual wellness and our communal wellness. And it's time for this to come back. It's time for this to be an active part of Salvadorian life and an active part of global spiritual practice.
Kimmy, we don't know each other well, but I have to say from the outside, your other gifts and whatever that, just whatever you were born with and then whatever you've cultivated up, in your journey to this point, I feel like you are, just makes so much sense from the outside to hear you speak about it. And not just, I mean, there's that, speaking of the heart connection to the ritual and ceremony, there's something really special inside of you and the way that you share it that just really comes through. And so it makes so much sense to me that, yeah, this is your journey and it's happening. And I mean, even though I don't know you very well, I can feel the energy of it and the richness of, yeah, it, you being the vehicle or the vessel that is coming through.
You, Angela, that means a lot.
You're welcome. Did your dad know? So as I was listening to that story, did your dad know you were having this relationship with cacao when he reached out to say, I want to go back? Or was that just
It was a
happened?
coincidence.
Wow.
Yeah, it just kind of happened, and this is why I'm such a believer in the universe that things really come to, things just are happening in the background that we don't even know about. And my dad and I are definitely working on a soul path, walking side by side. Whatever assignment that our souls had, they're very much entwined together. Our fates are locked in together, and I feel really proud of that. I know not everyone gets to have that kind of relationship with their family, and it's been, to be really vulnerable and open, it's been a lot of work to build our relationship in this place where we can do what we're doing. Because as I mentioned, my family owned a bakery, and if you know anything about the bakery business, it is not for the weak. He was the baker. My mom was doing the admin things to run the business, and he was like up at 3 a.m., back home by 8, 9 a.m. or 9 p.m. It was a tough life. And so I kind of grew up, both my sisters, all three of us, my sisters and I, we kind of felt like we didn't really know our father that much. It was just like in these moments on the weekend, or these little moments late at night when we're doing our homework. We didn't have that time. We were really close to our mom and some other relatives, but I think that kind of, there was always this sadness that we carried by not having that connection. And here I am, I'm 33. He's 70. He's gonna be 76 this year, which is wild. And we've had this opportunity to really build our relationship for the first time and really explore what are the ways that we inspire each other? What are the ways that we grow each other? And even, I'll be honest, in the beginning it was hard. It was really hard. I'm my grown up self, and he is his grown up self. And we were like, what are you like? And we were living together here. There was a lot of change. And so there was a lot of navigating, but we found our connection through the land, and me watching the joy in his eyes when he planted his first harvest of corn, the energy that I felt from him when we would walk our ancestral lands. And we've had these farms in our family for over 300 years. Like, that's such a gift. It's such a gift. And I had visited before when I was a teenager, but being an adult now, going through the journey I've been on, I started to get deeply emotional and deeply tied to the land, just walking it with him, thinking, oh my gosh, like one day I'm going to be here, and he's going to be with me, but in a spiritual sense, not in a physical sense. And I have a responsibility, and I'm taking it.
So the land that's been in your family, they didn't need to let it go when they moved to the US to the, is that, can you tell me
Right.
about that?
Yeah, sure. So just for a little bit of background for maybe folks who don't know, El Salvador had a really tumultuous, or I mean, I can say it has been having a really tumultuous period of history. I mean, we could really go back as far as like 100 years and kind of seeing these trends of instability, but things really came to a head and were boiling up in the 70s. The war is officially recorded from 1980 to 1992 as one of the longest civil wars in Latin American history. And that civil war forced thousands of people to fight or escape or just do anything they could to survive. So my dad, he was one of seven kids. And out of the seven of them, six migrated in all different kinds of ways. And so what was really hard about that was that there was this sense of needing to abandon, needing to just leave and survive. Mm-hmm. Luckily, my tia, my dad's eldest sister, she was able to stay and for the most part protect and keep what was ours in the family. But that there was a number of struggles with that along the way. So we're very grateful to actually have this chance in this moment in time to return. El Salvador is healing. El Salvador is safer. And I think there's going to be several more big changes throughout the country to really get us fully stable. But we've never been here before. I never thought in my life that I'd ever have a chance to come back and even live in El Salvador, because the story was, you know, where I was born and raised in the U.S. And I think there's like a very strong identity around someone who was a refugee, that if you have a family or you start a new life somewhere, you take that identity on out of pride. And so I, you know, that was very ingrained in me as well, but it's the story has changed and people are really celebrating this ability to come back. So for our farmer family, this opportunity allows us to return to the land and to really pick up where we left off. And my dad, he was, before he migrated, he was studying to be a farmer. He was enrolling in the university and he was going to carry on his family's tradition. But that got interrupted. And so now I love seeing him in his 75-year-old self planting corn and cacao and coffee. And so it makes me think about the link that I hold in the chain of our family story of being able to carry that on. And there's a different layer. It's not just about maintaining the land and growing things or raising cattle or anything like that. But for me, as someone who's very spiritually oriented and has had this whole spiritual journey, and I've been so privileged to have access to different modalities of healing and education around healing. For me, I want to bring healing into farming practice, and I'm starting with cacao, and I'm excited to discover what other plants that are native to these lands that I can grow. But cacao is a way to honor our indigenous ancestors, a way to distinctly bring heart medicine into our communities, which are so needed. And to also, I'm thinking a lot about the Salvadorian community, because right now how people know cacao and chocolate is super sweet. Salvadorians love sugar. So you can go to the grocery store and you can buy these like discs. They're like chocolate discs and they're like packed with sugar and cinnamon and they're absolutely delicious. And we melt them down with milk or water and have hot chocolate. But there's very, very little conversation within the home around any of like the healing or the story of cacao. It's just like, great, let's have this amazing sweet chocolate. And so what I'm hoping to do, I have two big focuses of being in this work. One is in sharing the story of our ancestry with Salvadorians and making that available to people. And as we're developing the farm, I want to bring kids from the schools and tell them about our Mayan ancestors and show them how cacao is grown. I want to be able to make this knowledge known and talk about how we can turn to plants for healing and for connecting to our bodies. And for a country that's been through so much trauma, this can be a soft access point, I think, I hope, for people to start to feel, to heal, to connect to something that is accessible. That's what I'm really hoping towards. And then the second layer of that, beyond our immediate community, is to continue to share cacao as a medicine to whoever wants to learn about it. And I loved having you in our gathering that night, Angela, because it's so special what can happen when people come together to sit with intentionality and truly receive the benefits of cacao and what it does for those who might not know. I keep talking about it as a heart opener, and the science behind that is that it's a vasodilator. It opens up your veins in a really gentle way. And so that openness creates a channel of connection between the mind, the heart, and the body. And especially when we operate through our world just thinking and doing so much, really just operating from the neck up, it's very easy to be disconnected. So cacao brings us back into the body and fills us with this nourishing, loving energy that comes from the mother spirit of cacao, which has been so deeply revered through our indigenous ancestors. And it's something that all humanity can use anytime, but especially now. And I'm hoping through the safety that is coming in El Salvador, and hopefully through the other communities around us throughout Central America, that we can share this resource of heart wisdom and heart connection, because we need it. We need it.
Amy, when you say sharing it with the kids, because I think of, like, you know, how we make a difference, and yeah, starting with the young ones and just building this into, you know, who they are becoming feels really powerful to me. And I'm curious, have you already stepped into that realm, or is that more this vision, that this idea that you have that you would like to do?
It's such a great question. It's part of the vision, and it's on the way. I think the hardest part for me is being impatient.
Late.
Yes. And, you know, allowing myself to kind of step back and just say, okay, let things unfold as they need to, trusting the process step by step. I have the whole vision in my mind. But that's part of what the land is teaching me now, is like, girl, plant the seed, let it grow. Mm-hmm. It's okay. You don't need to do it all at once. And I came from, I think American culture is just so fast paced, instantaneous. I've become very conditioned in that. And so while I know that there's something so immediate about wanting to bring this all out into the world, I also need to be okay with it taking its time. So the stage that I'm in right now is in deepening my practice around cacao, gathering as much wisdom as I can, sharing what I know with the communities that I have access to, which right now at this moment, as I live by the beach in El Salvador, I'm part of the tourist communities. And so my strength is building through sharing cacao with tourists, with travelers, with people who are seeking to learn about our lands. And while we're doing that, my dad's growing our trees. They're about 3 feet tall now, which is really exciting, and developing really important relationships in the farming world. And so we have about 2 different farms that we're working with to source cacao. And that's what we sell. It's what we use as an educational tool. And then as soon as our farm is ready, we're going to be another source of education that we can bring people to. So it's almost at the state where it's going to be appropriate to have people come and visit. And I feel really fortunate that in our home village, my family has been really involved in the community through local government and things like that. And so we're building these connections of the school relationships, of the community projects, of how to bring people in. I think it's just a matter of time. And I want to be ready. I want to feel like I have what I need. As much as I can, you know, we're never 100% ready, but in terms of knowledge, and that the land is ready to have visitors, and that a strong infrastructure is there, because I don't want to just, like, and of course everything's a learning process, but sure, we could bring people there now, but I want to be able to have the path available of interaction, of continuation, like to really make it sustainable, to have a program set up that not only are the connections made and the learning happens, but that there's integration, that there's follow-up, that there's a way to continue to build relationship with these children or with these visitors, that it's not just a one-off thing. Like I've been in education in my day job for a really long time, and sustained education is most successful when there's continuity and when there's consistency in some way. Of course, one-off experiential moments can be meaningful, but the vision that I have around healing for people in our country, it can happen in a deeper way when there's a little bit more infrastructure. So that's kind of what I've been meditating on in the last year. And I'm like, all right, I'm going to build the relationships. I'm going to practice the practice. I'm going to practice and keep learning. And when the time comes, it's going to be great. And something that I've learned about El Salvador is that people really do operate as a village. People really do operate in community. And so making these really important relationships when it's the time, when I call on those relationships, everything is just going to flow. And I think that's been a really important lesson for me, is to not only trust, but to also center relationships in anything that I'm trying to do.
So wise, Kimmy. I think the patience, it can be the hardest part. And I do think that there is something in American culture that, well, not think, I'm in agreement, and I feel like lived it, of just this like instant gratification that we've been
totally
trained to expect because of just so much privilege and accessibility. So yeah, retraining myself or rewiring my brain to patience has been quite a practice, and letting things unfold in their own time. And I was thinking when I heard you speak about this that, well, I imagine, like you said, the community, folks are going to present themselves so that you don't have to do it all, because with each, so that your strengths are able to shine as this continues to grow and evolve. I think that, you know, the right people are going to present themselves to join you on this journey.
Absolutely. Thank you for affirming that. I truly believe that. And I think that's something that we can carry, anyone listening can carry that into our lives, because I think so often the modern day story is that I can do it all on my own and I'm independent and I'm strong, which yes, you are independent and you are strong and you have what you need and you're capable of everything, but you don't have to do it alone. And that's something that I've been kind of unlearning as I've kind of surrendered myself into my culture of origin. And it's been really liberating, actually. It's been work. It's been work, but I feel grateful for the slow consciousness. And I think I used to have this like this little voice in the back of my head that if I don't see results right away, then it's not good or it's not happening. And I'm like, wait, who said that? And just look at the life cycle of a tree. It can take months or years for anything to grow. So why am I going to expect that I'm going to do what I need to do in, you know, 1 month or one season, right?
Mm-hmm. I mean, the farm just gets to be a metaphor itself for you as it takes its time doing its thing over the course of seasons and years.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm grateful for that. I think it just takes a lot of just self-love and a self-appreciation and releasing of fear, because maybe there's also a fear of like something will be lost if you take too much time or if just something doesn't happen right away. And I think that fear consciousness is what kind of keeps us in that, like, I'll say it this way, actually, being in an abundant state of mind and being in a trusting state of mind. And it doesn't mean that you're passive and you sit back and you wait for things to happen. You definitely make little actions each and every day, but the abundant state of mind is knowing that it's going to happen when it's supposed to. I'm going to do my efforts and I'm not going to worry that, you know, it's going to disappear or someone's going to take this away or whatever. No, it's just trusting that I need the right soil. I need the right amount of sunshine. I need the right amount of water, and it's going to happen when it happens.
That's so beautiful. And it's, you know, easier to talk about than to live, like to embody. I have found. And I, coming back to that independence and asking for help, because I do think of Hispanic culture as having that sense of the village and the community. And I'm finding ways to create that. But I moved away from my family. My family lives in Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. In the States, and I live in Utah, which is quite, it's a, you know, 2 days drive, or it's quite a long ways away. And I've only, I don't know when I realized, like there, I had this voice in my head when my son was tiny that I was like, help is not on the way. And what a sad thought to have. And it's taken me a while to recognize that this thing that I've been so proud of for all of my life, kind of this fierce independence, is not serving me in so many ways. And it's interesting to see how hard it is for me to ask for help, just for the littlest things. And then recently I had this course of like 2 weeks where different friends were asking me for help. And I was like, oh, this is an easy yes. And I was like, oh, this is the universe of God telling me like, it's okay. Like people can say no. So even though I feel that fear of asking for help, I'm starting to like take little steps into that, which feels like a big deal. And I do think it's like another part of like our culture that I think would be really cool. I mean, for women in particular, and I should say that because I guess because I'm a woman, because I think that men are probably experiencing this as well. Just like this need to go alone and figure it all out. And that's pretty scary. And I really admire this idea of a village and coming together, and that we don't have to be do it alone, although it still feels a little foreign to me.
Thank you so much for sharing all of that. I think it's something that most people in the Western world experience, and you're not alone in feeling that. And it can feel like it might take some time to shift the consciousness. But something that that really helped me understand all of this is when I unlocked the realization that, wait, hold on a second. This idea of being independent is really just like a modern invention. It's probably something that was born out of the Industrial Revolution or around the boom, the economic boom of, you know, in the United States, and this idea of like, you can have it all and you can work and you can, or just needing to shift jobs and communities. Like once we started to have to like work in industry and off the land, that's when shifts begin to happen. For everyone in the world, if you go back to your roots and your ancestors, at every point in time for every civilization, we all lived off the land and we all supported each other. Mm-hmm. There's no group of people on this planet that didn't ever live alone, that people didn't live alone. They lived in tribes. They lived in ethnic groups. They lived in civilizations. They, even if it was small town shtetls, people lived together off the land, supporting one another. And there were people who had their jobs that they were skilled at, and no one had to be good at everything because they just had to be good at their thing so that they could help their neighbor with the other thing. And that really began to shift once, I think, you know, I haven't gone back and written this down, but I truly believe once the power dynamic around ownership or possession or something in our history changed, where the story started to sound like, well, you need to look out for yourself and you need to know how to do everything and you can't trust other people. Like something happened, and it created a ripple through our world, and really a hallmark. I think it's been packaged and it's been marketed in our Western consciousness that we need to do it all and we need to do it on our own. And while I truly deeply have gratitude for the system that I was raised in, because it's made me an independent, educated, feminist woman. and I being here around folks who haven't had those resources, I hold that value with a lot of gratitude. But I also see where I have so much to learn from people who are still in that village consciousness and are close to seasons and cycles and understandings of interconnectivity that it has been so lost and has been so disappeared from the way that modern humans are kind of celebrated and living today.
Kimmy, do you think we're like somehow, I don't know, like that through these conversations and these experiences that we're living, like you said, you're having this, you're so grateful for the journey that you had prior to this, and now you're looking back to see this other wisdom you can join it with. And I think that's happening in so many different areas. And I think that agricultural is actually a big resource for that connection. Maybe agriculture isn't the word, that connection to the land and however that looks. And I'm just thinking from a harmony perspective that we didn't know then what we know now, but now what we know now and what has happened on that journey of learning, now we're looking back. I'm just thinking of a conversation that I had with another amazing woman not so long ago, and she's using her art to heal these ancestral roots of feminism, and just how she, I don't know that I could speak to it as gracefully as I'd like in this moment, but she was saying that she read this book where the fabric was really all women had for a period of time to express art was through fabric. And so she's just all these cool perspectives. And I started to think about this when I began knitting. And then I was like, ooh, but, you know, like thinking about, you know, then the sheep and the land and just the, I don't know this. I think we have, and I could really go on a tangent here. I'm just thinking yes. of a friend of mine. I mean, I think that the fascination, even with, you know, cowboy culture in the US of ranching, and there's so much here. And yet, I don't necessarily, and I don't know because there's so much that I don't know, but I'm curious might be a better way to start this of, I don't necessarily, well, I guess I'm curious, I don't think it's the way it was before because now there's so many more humans on the earth, like finding our way forward in harmony doesn't look like how, like, so we're going back, but it's not necessarily to be the way that it was before. Just hearing you say like what you're bringing to cacao and to growing on the land in El Salvador and in connecting with your ancestors, you're creating something new and fresh. Like it's what you're creating is not what was, you're not going back reliving, you're creating something completely new. And it's really exciting. And I think it's happening in a lot of different places. And it makes me super grateful to have these conversations because even when they're messy and I hear myself and I think, what was I saying that I didn't really understand? But I think the tension and the shakeup helps us understand as we get curious.
Oof. Oof. Gratitude for the shakeup. Oof. Yep. It's like a little earthquake or like a big wave.
Yeah,
trying to surf and just have a good time, and then you get totally wiped out. Oh my gosh! I love that you shared all of that, and I feel so seen because these are things that I've been thinking about a lot recently. And the word that comes to me, Angela, is integration. It's the era of integration and evolution. We are evolutionary beings. It's in our DNA to survive and make it through, and to like evolvement is really just making the shift, making the pivots and adapting, being flexible so that you can survive. And so all of us who are alive today are alive because our ancestors did something to adapt to how the world was shifting. And so I think what we're looking at now is this era of, okay, we've been shifting and we've been pivoting and we have all these amazing things like technology and science and wisdom and independence and all of those things. And if we're too far into the future and if we're too far kind of off our groundedness, we're still missing some of the key ingredients of evolution, which is being aware and holding that humanness close in your heart. And so the way that I'm thinking about it is this time of integration is taking all of the benefits of the growth that we ourselves have experienced in our lifetimes and everything and everyone that came before it, and folding it in and mixing it together like how you would bake a delicious cake with all of the incredible evergreen wisdom of earth science, of like earth connection, of earth science, of philosophy, of humanity, and baking that with what we've been able to cultivate in a freer consciousness and in a world with more resources. I feel like it's a superhuman moment when you're able to have both. And if you're just in one way, you're missing a piece of the other. If we're just too futuristic oriented, then we're leaving our earth behind and we're leaving our stories behind and our cultures behind. Mm-hmm. If we're just in the past consciousness, then we're not ready to move and evolve and we're going to stay stuck. And so we need to have both. And I think about what's happening between my dad and I, and I really learned this from him because like even last night I showed him how to use wireless headphones. And he was so amazed. It was the first time he ever wore headphones without wires. Mm-hmm. And he said, "Wow, I'm evolved. I'm a modern man."
Aww.
And it was so sweet and so cute, but also so reflective of the kind of person he is, that he has survived as such a whole person in the world, because he's always ready to learn a new thing and to move with the tide and to change with the world. But what is unchanged are his values and is his sense of humanity. And so I look at him and I think, wow, that's the kind of person that I want to be, is someone who is deeply rooted in what's important, but also willing to adapt and integrate so that I can live really fully and thrive and carry that with others and share that with others.
What a gift, Kimmy, that he gave you, like that
to
I mean, I think that I've been a little resistant to that. I thought, you know, just with what my son is interested in sometimes. And, you know, we want to be guides as parents and help to shape those values, but it is such a dance. And I come back again and again to, like, how am I being? Who am I being? How am I showing up? Because I think then it doesn't matter. Like right now he's only 10, but he's like into Eminem and listening.
Oh, bless. Bless.
And then he doesn't want me to sing it or dance to it. And I was like, honey, this is like the music when I was, you know, like I'm an adult.
I grew up with Eminem, excuse me.
And I'm like,
it's his thing. Oh my
God. It's his thing. He's like, Mom, you don't know. You don't even know. You don't know what you're doing or saying. But I don't really necessarily want him listening to these words at 10 years old and this messaging. And yet there's something that he's drawn to in this. And is this the thing I want to choose to control? Or do I just focus on how, like, my anchor and how I'm being? It's like such a, like, and I feel like I have to make this choice all the time, you know, like, but the more I can come back to myself. So what a gift your dad has given you to be so steady in himself and his values, that you feel that, so that you can have your own journey, but see him expand over time and be open to new ideas and new experiences.
How old was he?
When he moved, when he migrated to the US, do you know?
He was about 20 years old. And it's funny because sometimes he says, I was 19. Sometimes he says, I was 21. So I don't know, somewhere in between. But he was young. That's a young age. You're still developing as a person and you have your whole life ahead of you. And then he returned to the land. This was 3 years ago. He was 72, 73.
Wow.
So a 50-year gap of being away. And when things started to feel a little safer, in the early thousands, he started doing trips for my sisters and I, and he would take us one at a time to meet my family. My grandfather was still alive, to share his culture, to get connected. But I remember those trips feeling a little fearful, a little bit of, okay, you're coming, but you're going to stay in the house and you can't go anywhere on your own. And now it's a new era that we're free and we're moving around, and we're really grateful for that. But he's really just coming back to himself after over 50 years. And he calls me and he tells me, oh, today I was working on the farm and I fed the cows and my back hurts. And I said, Dad, you don't have to work so hard. You know, you're in your 70s. Like, I know, but I love it. And he's just 20. He's 25 in his head. He really is picking up where he left off. And gosh, I'm getting emotional just thinking about it. I feel really grateful to witness this, because it's the kind of wisdom that I want to hold as I continue to grow.
Yeah. Do you think, Kimmy, that connection to the land is bringing him home to himself, or did he have that when he was still in the States? Like, was that embodied, that kind of deeper connection that was ready to expand? Or have you seen that evolve since he's been back in El Salvador?
Oh my gosh, now I got full on little tears.
Mm.
I think he always had a yearning. He always had a yearning to go back. because he just he respects our ancestors so much, and he gets emotional when he talks about his father and the way that his father worked the land, and he really looked up to his dad. I think he had a needing to live life and survive in the United States. He was deeply yearning to just go home to this life of working hard on the farm in the morning and then relaxing in the hammock in the afternoon. That's what he wanted. Mm-hmm. And I think the way that he figured out that he could survive and make a family and have a business was like another way of being with the land, which was through baking. He, you know, that is really alchemy in one way. You know, you're taking wheat and you're combining it with all these ingredients to make things. And I think that kept him connected, keeping his hands busy, creating something, being a maker and feeding people was his way of keeping that energy alive. But I have to tell you, the bakery industry and really just the circumstances that we were in, because there were times where we were very successful in our bakery, and then there were times that we weren't. And so just watching my parents really struggle to make ends meet sometimes, it was really hard to kind of watch that their spirits kind of hurt at different times of their lives. But now they're retired and they're feeling, you know, they're really resting on their laurels, which they worked so hard to earn. But he, I'm telling you, he's like 7 years younger. He's like waking up every day at like 4 or 5 a.m. and he's like, oh, I'm so busy. I have to go water the trees. And and he's so happy. And so I think, to answer your question, he always had it in him and he's finally made his way back. But with this integration piece, he's taking with him a whole career of how to really make something succeed in a different sense. And so that's why I think I really attribute that to the knowledge that he inherited as a farmer, but also his 50-year journey in the United States, navigating a whole other world, running a business, raising a family. It's helping him as a successful farmer now, and he's passing his knowledge to young people in the community and to the farm workers that he's hired. He's encouraging them to go to school. He's teaching them things that they don't learn in their, you know, they don't typically learn in their schools. And so it's really special to see how the journey has served him, and he's putting it back into the soil.
Mm. I just feel so inspired listening to you, Kimmy, and I feel like I have like a zillion more questions.
We can do a part two.
That's what I was thinking. Like, how fun would it be to talk again in like a year or a couple years and hear how it's evolved and what you're up to? Because, and I'm going to make a note of the questions that I have and so that they're ready for next time. Because, yeah, I feel like I could talk to you for hours. I have so many questions and I'm really enjoying listening. I'm so impressed and just so inspired and lit up by what you're doing. Do you drink cacao daily, or what does that look like for you?
Oh, I'm so moved. I'm so moved being in conversation with you, and thank you so much for the invitation. And I'm really excited to come back on in a year and talk about what's developed and what's changed and what's happening. Cause this is really the first time I've spoken this whole vision out publicly. It's kind of just been in my head. So I'm excited to see where it goes. So yeah, in terms of ritual, cacao finds me, and I find my cacao in all different ways. I would say most typically in the morning when I wake up, you know, I'll do my thing, and to kind of get my heart going and my day going, I'll make a fresh cup of cacao. And a pretty good recipe is about 2 tablespoons with either hot water or milk. And sometimes I'll add a little bit of honey or cinnamon if I'm feeling like really, really sweet that day. but being able to make that brings me a lot of joy. It's reminding me why I'm here, like physically here as a human and physically here in El Salvador. It's giving me that earth connection, that groundedness. That what the medicine does is it's if you think about it, having anything from a tree you become tree-like if you take that in. So I like to imagine what, as I'm drinking that, like my roots, my feet are connecting to all the roots of all the trees. And it just kind of helps me feel a little bit more steady and aware going into the day. And my practice looks different every day. Like sometimes my cacao happens midday or if a friend's coming over, we'll have an afternoon cacao together. But I try to have my cacao every day. And for the days that I don't, I'll have some seeds or just spend some time outside. Like I like to have a moment with the earth in some way every day. Mm-hmm. And it's been fun to kind of experiment with different recipes and try different things along the way.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for sharing that, Kimmy. I was picturing that and then also thinking about, ooh, I like this idea of having cacao every day.
It's delicious.
What are you currently reading?
I love that question. Well, you know what? I'm kind of entering my Chicana literature era. Mm-hmm. And I didn't grow up reading Latina authors. Like the school district that I was in, it just wasn't something that they had part of the curriculum. So maybe a lot of listeners have read this before, but I'm reading The House on Mango Street for the first time by Sandra Cisneros. And she's a Chicana author. Really incredible. And it's really fun to read her story. I'm still very much in the beginning, but it's just like this, you know, this young Mexicana in Chicago and thinking about this identity journey that I've been on and like really embracing myself as a Latina. So I'm enjoying that right now. And when I'm not reading that, I kind of have like a stack of different books that I kind of float through whatever is calling me. So something that I've been coming back to is the Seven Spiritual Laws of Success by Deepak Chopra. If you've ever read that, I'll just flip through that. Oh my gosh, highly recommend. I'll flip through that every once in a while just to be reminded about these laws of the universe that are really around non-judgment, non-attachment, kind of, you know, surrender and just ways to like cultivate a mindful way of being. That can be really helpful for me, especially in those moments that I get like lost in the sauce or too busy or like anxious about things. I'm like, okay, just remember I'm a human being, not a human doing. And there's a lot of wisdom that can help me.
Thank you. I have a bit of a book obsession. I haven't read either of those books. And so I'm excited to check both of them out. Thank you for sharing that with me and the listeners.
Yes. Yeah. I just love that question about what are you reading?
You know, I would love to inspire people to dive back into books. I read this crazy quote, or maybe I didn't read it. I heard it on a podcast about how little reading is actually happening, like that. Like some crazy percentage of Americans haven't even read a book in the last year. And that's wild to me. But I, you know, there are people who are reading, obviously, because books are selling and talk about books. And, you know, you just shared two books that you're currently reading. And so people are reading. I'm just really curious about this, like how, what that, can we bring a lightness to more reading? My son is pretty resistant to reading. And I noticed on this book that we were recently, I don't want to say I forced, but I just read. I just was like, we're doing this. And so, and then it was really just two nights. And he's like, oh, I'm kind of getting into it, the story. I was like, I don't know how, you know, when you think about like inspiring more people to read, I don't necessarily know how to do it, but I thought, what are you talking about it? And, you know, because sometimes things just aren't on our radar. They're just not in our realm. And since people are on their phones and watching TV, if books aren't in the realm, perhaps they're just, they're not even thinking about them. So perhaps just talking about it more will plant some seeds and who knows?
I love that. Let's normalize it.
Yeah.
And I get it. I think our world has just become so, not just technological, but like when if you need to know something, you just Google it or you like, there's a cute infographic on Instagram about it. Or like there's astrologers that I follow instead of opening an astrology book and researching it myself. Like I think there's a lot of convenience to that and all of that is great, but we don't want to completely, it kind of goes back to what we're saying. Like if we completely forego the other ways of being that we've learned that are part of our cultural heritage, that are part of our past, we lose a part of ourselves. So I'm personally, and like, I guess I'm a millennial. I think I'm kind of a bad millennial because I don't even own a TV, but, but I'm technically a millennial. And I find myself sometimes just getting like super lost in the technological world and have to be like, wait, slow down, girl, what are you doing? And so having books around and just having nature around has been really helpful. So if anyone's like kind of struggling to find their way into a book, it's okay. You're probably not alone. And maybe just start with finding something that's like really interesting to you or reflects part of your story. Cause I think through relating, we might have more opening. Mm. If that makes sense.
That is, yeah, that there's a lot there, Kimmy, that for folks to, yeah, like, what is it that you're curious about? And what,
yeah,
who's telling a story that resonates with you? What a great idea.
And I love podcasts too, because you can take those stories in through a different sense.
Yes.
We need all the things.
All the things. Oh, I so appreciate you coming on. I know that spending this time is, you know, when you have all these cool things going on, it's just a real honor that you took this time today to sit down and talk with me.
It was such an honor to be a guest and for just having the opportunity to share our story of our land here, my dad's story, my story, and I hope it encourages other people to get curious about their roots and where they come from and the kind of wisdom that can be really relevant, especially today.
Mm, thank you, Kimberly. And just so you know, I'll have a resource for folks with how to find you, if that's okay with you.
Please, yes.
Oh, yeah, like your Instagram handle and if you have a website, and no pressure if you don't, but just, yeah, a way that folks can follow your journey if they are interested and inspired.
Thank you so much. I would love to see you all here in El Salvador one day. Stay in touch with me. I do a lot of things all the time here, so you're welcome to come visit.
It's, yeah, such a beautiful place. Well, thank you, Kimmy, and have a great rest of your day.
Thank you so much. Be well.
You too.
Wow, that was so fun talking with Kimmy, and I truly could have kept talking with her. I want to offer here to close the show a few of my takeaways. So the first was honor the sacred. Kimmy shared that culture and ritual live inside of us, and we can get curious and explore and reflect. The second is patience, to let things unfold in their own time. The third, we don't have to do it all alone. The fourth, we are in an era of integration and evolution. That might be my favorite. They're all my favorite. That one I love. All right. Thank you so much for listening. If you liked this episode, please share it with a friend. Thank you. Thank you for tuning in to the Ritual of Practice podcast. You can find the show home at ritualofpractice.com. Follow us on your favorite listening platform to receive weekly inspiration for your practices. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with someone you love. Until next time, keep practicing.